glory of motherhood than bring forth life in an atmosphere that breathes only destruction and death. And if she does become a mother, it is to give to the child the deepest and best her being can yield. To grow with child is her motto. She knows that in that manner alone can she help build true manhood and womanhood. Ibsen must have had a vision of a free mother when, with a master stroke, he portrayed Mrs. Alving. She was the ideal mother because she had outgrown marriage and all its horrors, because she had broken her chains and set her spirit free to soar until it returned a personality regenerated and strong. Alas, it was too late to rescue her life's joy, her Oswald, but not too late to realize that love and freedom is the only condition of a beautiful life. Those who, like Mrs. Alving, have paid with blood and tears for their spiritual awakening, repudiate marriage as an imposition, a shallow, empty mockery. They know whether love lasts but one brief span of time or for an eternity, it is the only creative, inspiring, elevating basis for a new race, a new world. In our present pygmy state, love is indeed a stranger to most people. Misunderstood and shunned, it rarely takes root. Or if it does, it soon withers and dies. Its delicate fiber cannot endure the stress and strain of the daily grind. Its soul is too complex to adjust itself to the slimy woof of our social fabric. It weeps and moans and suffers with those who have need of it, yet lack the capacity to rise to love's summit. Someday, men and women will rise. They will reach the mountain peak. They will meet big and strong and free, ready to receive, to partake, and to bask in the golden rays of love. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee even approximately the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women? If the world is ever to give birth to true companionship and oneness, not marriage, but love will be the parent.
materialization of Greek ethnic and national identities via the bureaucracy of emigration. The Greek ethnicity of potential repatriates is an essential factor in the entire process of their migration to the homeland. Indeed, the Greekness of migrants has to be proved by documentation. Yet, in actual fact, their Greek ethnicity is partly constructed as a bureaucratic concept during the process of obtaining Greek visas and citizenship. In order to receive repatriation visas and or Greek citizenship, an applicant has to prove his or her connections with the Greek nation. The most solid evidence of belonging to the Greek nation was Greek citizenship, acquired under the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923, in the 1920s-30s by many Greek refugees who fled to Russia from the Ottoman Empire before and during World War I. This is why the Greeks, who were persecuted for possessing foreign passports and sent into exile in Central Asia during the Stalinist period, 1942, 1944 and 1949, became the first and most significant wave of returnees, Vautera, 1991, page 412. However, most of these repatriates were the children and grandchildren of genuine Greek citizens who had died or were too old to emigrate at the time. As a consequence, their descendants have to show evidence of their family ties with Greek nationals and sometimes make archival inquiries in the Greek Ministry of Foreign Affairs on their way home, on their way to the homeland. The following quotation from an interview with Seaman, who was born in North Kazakhstan, illustrates the smooth naturalization of those repatriates who managed to prove their genealogical ties with Greek nationals. Personally, I didn't have any difficulties with documents because the documents of my father, grandfather, his sister were in the archive of the Greek embassy. Were they Greek subjects? They were Greek subjects. They had passports of the Kingdom of Hellenes, and I had no problems. If you wanted to receive Greek citizenship, you went to Moscow at the time. At that time it was only in Moscow. If your documents were there, in the embassy archive, you were given all the documents for the Greek passport at once. This is what happened with my family. We arrived in Greece with these documents, went to the police station, and they gave us internal Greek passports, and became entitled to all rights as natives. Seaman, born 1955, Severskaya. Those migrants who had no Greek citizens among their ancestors, like the majority of the Vitaisevo and Kavadovsk Greeks, have to bring so-called additional papers as evidence of their Greekness. These are Soviet documents with their nationality record, such as the birth certificates of their parents, an internal passport, or even a Soviet Army service card, Voyenny Bilet. Birth certificates of parents are especially important documents for those who have a record of Russian nationality and a Soviet passport, which was useful for children of the numerous mixed marriages. The Soviet passport was used as an internal ID in the post-Soviet Russian Federation until January 2004, when it had to be completely replaced by a new internal Russian passport. However, it is such an important document for the issue of Greek repatriation that the General Consulate of Greece in Novorossiysk has urged Russian Greeks to keep their old passport even after receiving new documentation in order to prove their Greek origin, because a new internal passport provides no record of ethnicity. Vnimanie, 2002, page 1. the role of the Soviet passport is in no sense less important for the return journey home than for migration to the homeland. Thus, Caucasian Greeks who overstayed their tourist visas working in Greece used the Greek nationality record in the Soviet passport on their way home to avoid fines at border checkpoints. The importance of the Greek ethnicity record in economic migrants' passports was graphically explained by Ilya, who was once a chairperson of a Greek National Cultural Association in Russia, but has been living in Greece since 1999. Any citizen of the Russian Federation, not only Greeks, can take a tourist visa. He is treated as a tourist in Greece, and it is useless to shout that your mom, dad, granddad or grandma were Greeks. The only advantage is that when you leave Greece, if you overstay your visa, they do not fine you because you are Greek. Thank God there is still a record of nationality in the Soviet passport. Ilya, born 1967, Novorossiysk. Some migrants have to acquire Greek surnames first and start their trip to the homeland afterwards. In fact, many Greeks from southern Russia have Russian surnames, while the majority of Greek family names from Transcaucasia look Turkic or Muslim. These Russian-like or Turkish-like surnames may undermine the Greekness of repatriates in the eyes of immigrant clerks and lessen the chance of obtaining Greek citizenship. Even Ilya, who has a Russified surname, which is quite common among ethnic Russians, encountered difficulties proving his Greek ethnicity to Greek immigration authorities despite his reputation as one of the founders of the Greek revivalist movement in the former Soviet Union. I waited 2.5 years for my citizenship. Quite simply, the Greek Ministry of Foreign Affairs, saw my surname is Georgiev. Well, what is your relation to Greeks? It is not recorded on my mother's birth certificate that she is Greek. She was born in Kabardinka, a Greek village in Krasnodar Krai, but they did not mention nationality in the 1930s when this certificate was issued. Well, her parents' surname was Alexandrov. Who were they? In Greece it was decided that they could not be Greeks, that's all. Finally, I proved my Greek origin when I bought additional papers. The Soviet Army service card is an additional factor because it is usually given at age 16 and it has the record of your nationality. So it is a very important document. Ilya was born 1967 in Chelidzik. Hellenization of family names is part of the broader cultural progress taking place among Caucasian Greeks, namely the rediscovery of their Greek identity. This new Greek identity has proven to be different to the previous Soviet one. It came about in a situation where new ethnic and national boundaries were being drawn in previously uninterrupted Soviet space, and at the time when the post-Soviet Caucasus and Black Sea regions were becoming less isolated from neighboring areas of the Balkans and the Middle East. Adjusting to such shifts in national borders, people had to change their identities, and they did this quite literally by changing their names and ethnicity in their identification documents. For instance, the children of Russian fathers and Greek mothers insisted on putting their Greek nationality into their Soviet passports in order to be true Greeks, despite their Russian or Ukrainian surnames and the tradition of inheriting the ethnicity of the father. The power of documented ethnicity is so strong that it could overwhelm individual self-identification. During the most recent demographic census, October 2002 for example, one of my informants declared his ethnicity to be Russian, as recorded in his passport, in spite of his clearly Greek surname. His active participation in the local Greek society and the recognition of his Greekness by his colleagues and neighbors. Question. How did you answer the question about your nationality, nationalnost, in the forms for the demographic census? Answer. Of course, I answered Russian in accordance with my passport. Как по паспорти? Vladimir, born 1954 in Khabarovsky. Thus, Greek ethnicity needs to be proven by bureaucratic documents in order to be considered sufficient for obtaining Greek nationality. Indeed, without such documents, ethnic identity is seen as something incomplete and even in danger. In the Soviet and post-Soviet contexts, as well as in the practice of Greek consulates, it is not enough to have self-identification or to be identified by others as a member of a certain ethnic group. What counts as true identity for officialdom needs to be fixed, to be based in some sense of material proof. Thus, ethnic identity is materialized in the form of ethnicity records in documents of different sorts and constitutes an integral part of the post-Soviet individual as a subject of state bureaucracy. Greekness as commodity. The materialization of Greek identity in documents makes it in some respects the precursor of the commoditization of documented Greekness. Indeed, documents proving Greek origin are seen as the equivalent of hard currency, convertible into the valuable emblem of Greek citizenship, which also takes quite material shape, the Greek national passport. This passport enables the holder to be a migrant to Greece and at the end of the day brings wealth. It also supplies people with a feeling of security in the uncertain Russian environment. In fact, Greek nationality is acquired via financial transactions which vary from the payment of consulate fees for repatriation or tourist visas to the bribery of different official institutions for lacking but desperately needed additional papers. For instance, the church marriage certificate of parents is included in the list of documents required for issuing repatriation visas. Church marriages were very rare during the Soviet period, and if they did place, it was unlikely that any certificates would be issued at the time. Consequently, Greeks seeking to emigrate to Greece had to pay substantial sums to Russian Orthodox priests in local churches for these certificates, even if their parents were never married in church. There was a standard list of documents for repatriation. First of all, it was the birth certificate. Then, the birth certificate of parents. The marriage certificate of parents. Plus, there were absolutely stupid documents such as the church marriage certificate of parents and your certificate of baptism in Orthodox Christianity. But people could not have such documents, could they? As a matter of fact, nobody had these. It was your problem to get these certificates by paying bribes. How many priests became fatter in Russia because of this? They should send a telegram of thanks to the president of Greece. The other side of such commoditization of Greek identity is the fear that documents proving Greekness can be faked, and Greek identity can be purchased by non-Greeks. This can devalue one's documented Greekness and undermine Greek people's social and economic positions achieved via the conversion of credible and well-documented Greek ethnicity into valuable European passports and imagined easy access to stable Western currencies. Such fears are probably justified. Numerous cases in which non-Greeks obtained repatriation visa through the General Consulate in Novorossiysk were investigated by the Greek Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 1999 and in 2000. During the time of this investigation, the Novorossiysk Consulate stopped issuing visa and Greek from all South Russian and North Caucasian regions had to go to the Greek embassy in Moscow in order to get their visa. This made the trip to Greece more expensive and time-consuming. But all such inconveniences seem to pale in importance next to the damage done to the trust which had grown up between the local Greek communities and the consulate. Relationship between the consulate and local Greek national cultural societies, for example, first cooled and then became increasingly hostile. The deputy chairperson of the Vitiaisevo Greek organization mentioned this distrust in relations between the consulate and Greek societies in his interview. There are many Chechens of Greek extraction now in Greece. The Greek consul let many of the Chechens and Armenians in for some token of appreciation. They are called there and asked, "Where did you get your visa from?" "From the Novorossiysk consulate." And they started to check the consul's work. The investigator came here from there. They invited the chairman of our Greek society to come to the consulate. And the investigator questioned him there. But he, the chairman, told them, "You had better question your own people. This is all their business. We didn't send anyone who were not Greeks to Greece." Andrei, born in 1950. Finally, attention should be paid to the role which regional xenophobic discourses play in Greeks' perceptions of the threat to their right to migrate to Greece. Although the ministry's investigation highlighted some instances of corruption among the consulate clerks, the local Greeks fear that their privileged Greekness could be adulterated also reveals local xenophobic attitudes towards migrants from other North Caucasian regions and Transcaucasia. In fact, the stereotype of these migrants as people engaged in criminal and or commerce-oriented activities is widespread in post-Soviet Russia and particularly sharply articulated in Krasnodar Krai and the Republic of Adygeia. The legacy of communist ideology is still powerful and commerce is seen as shameful and parasitical. The word speculant, profiteer, remains the scornful name for private traders everywhere in the post-Soviet space. The ability of migrants to buy and sell everything at a profit is exaggerated in xenophobic hate speech, where the asserted threat is that strangers, migrants are usually assumed to be ethnically different from the locals, will buy up the local land or, as in the Greek case, obtain Greek identity through bribery. The emigration business of Greek national cultural societies. The Greek national cultural societies, established throughout post-Soviet space since the early 1990s, in those towns and villages with substantial Greek populations, take an active part in the management of Greek migration to and from Greece. The aforementioned dispute between Greek national cultural organizations and the Greek consulate is a reflection of their rivalry for control over the movement of Caucasian Greeks between Greece and Russia. In this competition, Greek ethnicity is employed by both sides as an instrument to which to impose this control and as a commodity for use in accumulation of social and economic capital. The Greek organizations in Russia maintain the ideology of Pan-Hellenism, which represents Greece as the historic homeland and the cultural center for the Greek diaspora all over the world. At the same time, because it is critical for the construction of ethnic and national identities among former Soviet Greeks, the connection with Greece has always been important for the economic survival of the Greek cultural revivalist movement throughout the former USSR. Financial and material support for cultural projects run by Greek organizations in the former Soviet Union has been provided by governmental institutions working with the Greek diaspora, as well as by non-governmental Pontic cultural associations in Greece. Teachers and textbooks for modern Greek language classes and illustrated handbooks on Pontic folklore have been sent from Greece to the Greek societies in Russia. Humanitarian aid directed from Greece to support the needy Greek population in the former Soviet Union is also distributed through the network of these organizations. This cross-border collaboration at the institutional level has gone hand in hand with the re-establishment of contacts with the relatives who emigrated to Greece before World War II and their descendants at the individual level. This Greek Renaissance has been accompanied at both levels by economic activities which vary from petty shuttle trade and seasonal labor performed by Soviet Greeks in Greece while visiting their relatives, to the establishment of joint venture enterprises. Совместные предприятия with business partners from Greece by the leaders of Greek national cultural organizations. A similar process is documented by Georgios Angelopoulos among the Krasiot Greeks in post-socialist Bulgaria, in their relations with their relatives from Nea Kasia, across the border in Greece. In the case of the Bulgarian Greeks, due to certain structural reasons, Bulgarian and Greek state policies and the size of the diaspora population, as well as the limited exchange value of Greek ethnicity at the level of individual actions, the initial euphoria of the revival soon died out, and cross-border relations between Krasiot communities have become institutionalized and state-controlled. In southern Russia, the Greek revival movement apparently continues to play an important role in the economic, political, and cultural activities of the local Greek population. The relative success of the Greek identity revival in Russia, commoditization of this identity might be seen as one of the side effects and indicators of this success, cannot be attributed solely to the importance of Greek ethnicity for navigation of the transnational circuit by former Soviet Greeks that has been outlined in previous sections of this article. The local context in which meanings of Greek ethnicity are reproduced and reinterpreted also has to be taken into account. It seems that, as in the case of the failure of the Greek revival in Bulgaria, the analysis of its sustainability in Russia also reveals the process of identity construction as a complex intersection of structure and agency. At the structural level, the legacy of Soviet ethno-federalism and institutionalized forms of individual ethnic self-identifications of citizens might be partly responsible for the growth of ethno-nationalist movement in the post-Soviet period. Brubaker, 1996, page 3031. Greek identity was, for instance, enhanced by the Bolsheviks' policy of indigenization, korenizatsia, through establishment of the Greek national districts, rayon, in Krasnodar Krai in the 1930s. Subsequently, Greeks victimized by Stalinist repression and exile, as an unreliable people, were forced to take their ethnicity and indeed nationality seriously. The effect of ethnicity records in Soviet internal passports on the process of identity construction and representation amongst the post-Soviet Greek population has been already discussed in this article. This existentialist understanding of ethnicity was interwoven into the social fabric of the Soviet Union, and after the dismantling of the ideological monopoly of the Communist Party, ethno-nationalist movements became the most visible political force in the post-Soviet space, as well as in many post-socialist societies of Eastern Europe. Federi, 1996, page 83. The increasing influence exerted by ethnic national cultural organizations on the everyday life of local communities also highlights the significant role that the issues of ethnicity and nations play in the process of reconstruction of post-socialist social identities. In the Russian Federation, ethno-national organizations have also often been viewed by the state in an essentialist way as ethnic communities themselves. Osipov, 2004, page 60. The state tries to control and manipulate them in order to secure the governing of the country, which, since the collapse of the Soviet Union, has been increasingly divided into ethnic and regional entities. In a situation where former Soviet political and social institutions have disappeared or become weak, national cultural organizations are delegated certain rights and obligations to engage with the populations that they represent. The Greek national cultural societies working in Vitiasevo and Kavardovsky, for example, are involved in providing social services to the local population, including community welfare and public security, and sustaining so-called traditional culture as well as the physical and moral health of the locals. They take part in consultative meetings organized by regional and local authorities on a regular basis. The leaders of these organizations act as mediators in disputes between Greeks and representatives of other groups. As legal entities, juridicheskie lidza, Greek organizations even run their own businesses. However, they justify these economic activities by the moral imperative of work in the interest of the whole community. This community is assumed to be a predominantly Greek one. In the conditions of contemporary Russia, where institutionalized ethnic organizations often become a mediator in relationships between citizens and the state, individual actors develop strategies which enable them to use their ethnic origin as an additional, but sometimes vital, social and economic resource. In Vitiasevo, for example, taxi drivers who were ethnically Greek, but not formal members of the local Greek society, asked the leader of this organization to bring his influence to bear on the district authorities and help protect locals from the cavalier actions of the traffic police when they were working outside the town borders. Involvement of Greek revivalist organizations in a transnational migration of the former Soviet Greek is a good illustration of Bourdieu's idea that practical classifications, Bourdieu sees ethnicity as one such classification, are always subordinated to practical functions and oriented towards the production of social effects. In southern Russia, local Greeks find it practical to use Greek national cultural organizations, which constitute a semi-controlled and state-manipulated form of post-Soviet civil society in their cross-border movement to Greece. The Greek organizations have become channels for the transnational flow of ideas and goods as well as people. The management of this movement is now the most important part of these societies' activities. Using established contacts with governmental agencies and Pontic associations, the local Greek societies regularly send children to summer camps in Greece and enlist their young members into the student exchange programs for enrollment at Greek universities. The Greek national cultural organizations also help people with visa and transportation to Greece. By assisting with migration to Greece, the Greek national cultural organizations gain both social and economic capital. In the early and mid-1990s, the Greek societies in southern Russia were commissioned by the Greek embassy in Moscow to collect the passports of those local Greeks who wished to obtain visa for visits to the country. Migrants who applied for visa through these societies had to pay additional money to the Greek organizations as reimbursement for transportation and other expenses along with the visa fee. This mediating service proved to be quite a profitable business, which significantly improved the financial situation of Greek non-governmental and non-commercial organizations. Since the General Consulate was opened in Novorossiysk, Greek from Krasnodar Krai and Adygea have applied directly to this office for visa. As a consequence, the visa business of local Greek organizations has declined in these regions. However, it still remains important for the Greek organizations in Stavropol Krai and the North Caucasian Autonomous Republics, which are remote from both the Greek embassy in Moscow and the consulate in Novorossiysk. Sometimes visa issues overshadow other social and cultural activities on the agenda of Greek societies. This leads to rumors and suspicions within the Greek revivalist movement that some organizations are trading Greek ethnicity to outsiders. On the contrary, the local Greek societies in Vitiesevo and Chavadovsky emphasize the social importance of their involvement in migration activities. For example, they play the role of mediators between the local Greek population and Greek tourist firms, which organize a regular coach service between southern Russia and Greece. They keep in touch with the owners of these firms, inform local Greeks about the coach schedules, and reserve seats on board for them. On the way back to Russia, the Greek organizations also collect parcels sent by immigrant Greeks to their relatives. These societies distribute visa application forms among locals who intend to visit Greece and help them to fill out these forms correctly. In so doing, as the deputy chairperson of the Vitiesevo Greek Society insisted, they further the public interests of their communities without any financial benefit to themselves. Here, we only fill out applications for receiving tourist visa. Quite simply, if they, the local Greeks, fill out this application in the consulate, they are charged 250 rubles for each application, because the consulate clerks complete these applications on their behalf. We lighten this burden on our citizens. We do all this free of charge. Question. These applications have to be made in Greek, don't they? Yes, We fill them in Greek and in Latin. We do all this, so we lighten the burden on our people. Even if the local Greek national cultural organizations do not make money from the assistance they give to migrants, they undeniably increase their political influence on the local community by providing facilities for transnational migration, a service which is vitally important for the economic survival of the Russian Greeks. As the following quotations from interviews demonstrate, the Greek society's help with migration to and contacts with Greece is often seen by the local Greeks as their most valuable activity. Although facilitating the repatriation of the Greek diaspora is never mentioned in the official programs of the Greek national cultural associations. Question. I'm interested in the Greek society. What do they do? What are their main activities? Answer. There are activities. From time to time they help people. They send children to Greece, for example. Such things as visa, well, they help with these things. Question. Have you ever turned to them? I turned to them once. It was when I sent my passport for a Greek visa through this society. Question. Have you ever been in contact with the Greek society? Answer. I went to Greece via this society 2 years ago. They helped me, gave me money to pay visa expenses. Question. Well, what are their other activities? I don't know. Ask them what their duties are, what they do. Question. Do you know what the Greek society is doing here? Answer. No, I don't know. I haven't a clue. Probably if someone needs some documents, he, the chairman of the society, helps to prepare them. Question. What sort of documents are you talking about? Answer. For example, if someone goes to work in Greece, or people go there for permanent residence. На постоянное место жительства. Yeah. The chairman helps to organize all this. This close familiarity of the Greek societies with Greece and migration issues makes these organizations popular among people who plan to make the journey to Greece. The educational programs put on by the Greek organizations, such as Lessons in Modern Greek, are viewed as useful for cultural adaptation in the historical homeland. The members of ethnically mixed families, or people with a Russian ethnicity record in their Soviet passports, see their enrollment in Greek national cultural organizations as a public declaration of their self-identification with Greeks. They might also suppose membership of a Greek society to be a first and necessary step on their way to Greece. Perhaps the members of Papandopoulos' family introduced at the beginning of this article were about to start their own transnational circuit. Although they had a recorded Russian nationality, they possessed a proper Pontic Greek surname. Valuable documents that could prove their Greek genealogy and were prepared to pay for their membership of the Greek society. Conclusion. The informants' experience of dealing with citizenship and immigration regimes demonstrates that the ethnic and national identities of Greek transnational migrants are constantly being negotiated and contested in the course of their migration to Greece. The Greekness of the repatriates is shaped by the immigration bureaucracy. It is also instrumentally employed in the migrants' cross-border economic activities. Passing through official immigration procedures, this Greek ethnicity is manifested in the form of different documents, and it is sometimes seen as a commodity by people involved in transnational migration. The formal requirements of citizenship and visa regimes are fulfilled or overcome by the Greek migrants using informal approaches and connections which include local Greek organizations, friends, and family. Participating in a transnational circuit the migrants customize and reinterpret meanings of citizenship and nationality in such a way that they can more or less successfully adapt to and utilize for their own benefits new regimes of international frontiers which have been emerging since the collapse of the Soviet Union and which with the enlargement of the European Union. The outcomes migrants anticipate from their actions are deeply rooted in their structural positioning by the national state as diaspora, repatriates and descendants of Greek nationals, etc. Thus, the national order of things is reproduced, but also customized and shifted through the practices of transnational migrants.